Hello and welcome to another Sunshine Radio podcast. Today we've got Family Fostering Partners here. They are the fostering agency that cares. In this episode, they'll talk about what it takes to be a foster parent, the training and support involved, as well as chatting with someone going through that process at the moment. By the way, if you like this, why not check out all the other podcasts we have on sunshineradio.co.uk.
Hello, my name's Judith and I work for Family Fostering Partners, and we are an independent fostering agency who work in and around Hereford and the surrounding areas. And we've all seen an awful lot in the media recently about fostering and about how many more foster parents are needed in so many different areas that we thought it would be really good if we pulled this podcast together so we can maybe myth bust a bit for you and talk to you a bit more about the process of becoming a foster parent, what that entails, and just maybe put people's minds at ease if you're out there thinking, shall I be a foster parent, would it be for me? We just thought it would be a really good idea. So that's us this morning. And I've got with me my colleague, Hannah.
Hi, my name's Hannah. I am the Foster Parent Training and Retention Manager at FFP. So I am responsible for facilitating all of our in-house training. And I work really closely with the rest of our team around foster carer retention and foster carer support as well. So that's my role within FFP. And we've also got Eddie with us today.
Hi, my name is Eddie. I'm a newly approved foster parent. I was approved on the 26th of May. And I'm currently waiting for a placement so a long-term child can be placed with us.
And you've done a bit of respite while you're waiting for that, Ed,
yes,
haven't you?
Exactly.
We talk about that.
Yeah.
Well, I think, Eddie, one of the things that sometimes is a bit of a hurdle for people maybe who are thinking about foster care is that initial jump, isn't it? So what was that process like for you? Why, you know, what sort of, what led you to think, yep, this is what I want to do and contact us in the first instance, really?
It was something that I always wanted to do, really. I mean, through my life, I always considered myself quite privileged to have had a good family and a very close-knit group of friends. And when I finally decided to approach you, I think I was at the stage in my life where I had already done everything I really wanted to do professionally, and I was really ready for a change. So looking online at the different options that I had, such as adoption or fostering, I learned a little bit more about the process of fostering through looking at your website. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really, really good avenue for me, and it actually matched perfectly what I wanted to do because of all the support that is provided during the process of fostering, but also because I understood the importance of for the children to have those connections that they already have with the birth family. So that's what it really inspired me.
Do you know what I'm really interested in, Ed? Because you made contact with us via a website and you used what we've got on there called Talk, which is a sort of live, real-time sort of chat facility on there. And it's usually me and one other person who mans that talk, and we man it up until, I think it's midnight in the evening, that we kind of take a little break from it until the next morning. And I'm really fascinated always because Talk tends to go off at key times, usually when I've just cooked my supper and we're ready to sit down and eat. And then one of us will be frantically going, Talk's going, what are you doing? Can you pick it up so that we're responsive to people? Was it? Because I think you contacted us at sort of Emmerdale Farm time, you know, in the middle of people's evening meals. What was it that made you make that contact that evening? Was there a trigger, or was it just you were very bored and thought?
To be perfectly honest, Judith, I can't remember the exact time. But what I can assume is that maybe that time of the day is when one goes back home from the office or from work or whatever. Work people do, and it's maybe will you confront yourself and your home life, and maybe you have time with your partner and you discuss things. So I guess that was the situation with me, that I was most likely at home, and that decision that had been, or that idea that had been in my head for many, many months, most likely I discussed it with my partner, and that cemented itself. And also the reason why I contacted you via chat and not on the phone, that has to deal more with me being a little bit shy. I rather talk to somebody online first than picking up the phone and having a conversation. So that tool that you had in your website, for me was absolutely ideal, because it was personal, because I could, obviously I realized that it was, I was talking to a person and not to a computer. But also it provided me with certain degree of privacy without having to obviously speak to a person on the phone. So that was the initial day, obviously, the initial contact.
And that's really interesting for me to learn, because sometimes we wonder what makes it easy for people to either have that first contact, because it's scary, isn't it? To pick up the phone or to go, actually, I've been thinking about this for a long time, tell me more. Because people think that once you've made that call, you're going to be pushed into something that you might think, oh, it's not for me. So we've tried to look at all of the different ways people might want to communicate with us and to make it as responsive as it can be. But it's good to know that that facility helped you.
It was very, very easy. And obviously, I was only reassured afterwards when I started speaking to your colleagues and on the phone. And it was never, ever, I felt pushed into anything. So it was a very reassuring process. Obviously, it was easy from the point of view that the technology is there for us to communicate. It was mentally, obviously, quite a big decision to make, but one that I had already thought about, and I had the opportunity as well to ask all the questions that I had to ask through that initial process of registering my interest.
And from our point of view, it was well worth my tea getting cold, Ed, to have that conversation with you. So that's brilliant. Thank you. Yeah.
And I think that that process, you just said there that you were reassured. Obviously, the process was you were then allocated, weren't you, your own assessing social worker. So you were able to sort of develop that relationship with her. So through the process of the assessment, then you had that one continual person, didn't you? So when you're sort of, you know, going through the assessment process where we're looking at all your skills and your background and what you can bring to fostering, then you've got that sort of trusted person that you're developing that relationship with as well, isn't it?
Definitely, Hannah. That was very helpful to always have the same person. That person now knows us better than anybody else, because it is a very in-depth study that everybody does about prospective foster parents, and rightly so. That is also something that really reassured me, because when I made a decision of fostering, I was a little bit nervous at the beginning, thinking, how am I going to be taking care of somebody else's child? I hope that everything is checked properly. And that was a huge reassurance with me in all the checks that you as an agency did with both of us, with my partner and myself. It was very reassuring to see that it was done in detail and properly. So now I can be very confident that not just me as a foster parent, but any other foster parent has gone through a similar process. So we are qualified to take care of these young lives.
And it's a hugely responsible role, Ed, isn't it? Because you are a professional parent. You are looking after somebody else's child on behalf of the state. And that is a hugely responsible role. And it's not one that you took lightly in coming into that decision, but it's also not one that we take lightly, because we have to make sure that the right people are coming into fostering for the right reasons with a skill set, so that we can then use your skill set to look at the needs of a child and to think, okay, has Ed got what that young person needs? Is that a match? Is that a good place for that child to come in and recover from the trauma that they've been through, to settle and to see through their childhoods in that way? So it's a massively responsible role.
And I think that's another thing that sometimes people are worried about as well, isn't it? They're not sure if they've got the skills, but I think people really underestimate the importance of transferable skills as well, isn't it? Okay, you may not be, I don't know, a qualified teacher who's had 20 years of experience with, you know, hands-on work with children, but it may be that you work in a really stressful office environment, so you've got really good skills with communicating with other people. You know how to deal with stressful situations. You know how to relate to people. So I think, I don't know how you feel, Ed, but I think the assessment process helps to sort of pick out those skills as well, doesn't it? Helps you to sometimes reflect on your own skills and experience and recognise that actually some of your skills that may not necessarily be stereotypically the skills that you may think you need actually are super, super beneficial when it comes to, like Jude said, parenting a child on behalf of the state and working with all of these other professionals and working as a team around these really traumatised children.
I was worried at the beginning because obviously I know my strengths, but one of my weaknesses that I thought it was a weakness was that I hadn't parented a child before. Mm-hmm. But all of this comes out during the assessment process, and it was wonderful to see the report that is written after all this assessment is complete in preparation to go through the approval process that is called panel. And seeing our assessor's view of ourselves was amazing to see how she had highlighted lots of the strengths that obviously I knew they were there, but I had never thought would be applicable to something like fostering. And because the assessment is so in-depth, you are able to pick up on many, many of our natural strengths, such as empathy, such as patience, things that I believed are very necessary to take on a role as a foster parent for a child.
I think you touched on something really important there when you said, you know, you thought that because you hadn't parented your own birth child, that it might mean that you don't have the skills that foster parenting requires. And actually, we quite like working with people who haven't parented their own children, because then you don't have a set way of doing things. You know, when you've parented your own birth children, you have a way that you have done that, the way that you have enforced boundaries and rules and shown compassion and care and love. And that becomes your blueprint. And when you're looking after other people's children who've been through the kind of trauma that your own birth children may not have been through, you need a slightly different set of skills. And we have ironically found that it's much easier to teach people who've never parented those slightly different skills that you need, rather than have people who have been there, done it, and you know, are maybe less willing to take on advice about how you should act differently, do things differently, be exaggerated in the way that you parent. You know, when you're looking after children who've been through trauma, you have to do things so many more times, repeat routines, boundaries, not expect things back all of the time. And then when you do get something back, the reward is just incredible.
You did bring that as an agency through to us immediately from day one, that you obviously don't discriminate at all, in the sense of it doesn't matter if you had children beforehand, your own birth children or not, it doesn't matter if you are gay or straight, it doesn't matter if you are single or married, all of that kind of topics were explained to us, and we were, again, all our fears were kind of put to rest, and we were reassured that we could go through the process with the confidence that we could be successful.
Good. I'm glad that came across, because our children are so different that we need foster parents who are also different. If we had foster parents who were all exactly the same, we would be very poor at doing that matching. So we need people from all sorts of backgrounds who can bring their own individual skills into fostering. So I'm glad that you felt that it was inclusive and non-discriminatory in that way.
Yes, totally.
Good.
And I think it's something that we really pride ourselves on as well. Obviously, like Judah's saying, that we recognise that the parenting skills that you need, or the re-parenting skills, if you like, that you need when, you know, parenting and supporting children who've experienced trauma, very, very different to your sort of stereotypical parenting. So, you know, obviously I know that you've attended quite a lot of our training and things, and the support system that goes along with that. Obviously we've got quite a robust training program, haven't we? And hopefully you felt that has been a support, I guess, with developing your skills in that area.
It was absolutely amazing, the program. And again, from the beginning, since we started, we learned so much about, for example, child psychology. And maybe, Judith or Hannah, you want to explain something that we still remember today that we didn't really know, that is about how a child develops psychologically and the importance of those early experiences, because that's something that I was totally unaware of, how trauma can be caused at a very, very early age.
Yeah.
And we don't actually realize how important those first few months of anybody's life are. And that's something that, yes, the training has been very thorough and it has been amazing, and I still have to do a lot of more training. But what we have received so far has been very enlightening and amazing.
Yeah, I think attachment is something that underpins all of our training, and what you were saying there about the impact of trauma. So I think over the last few years there's been far more research into the impact that trauma has on children, because I think historically people were under the impression that, the child wasn't in that bad situation for very long, therefore everything will be fine. And I think for those of us working in foster care and social care in general, we see the long-term impact of trauma. And that's because every time when a baby is born, you know, every time you smile at a baby, every time you respond to a baby, every time you speak kindly to a baby, what happens is the neurons in the brain build little pathways, and the baby knows that they are loved. They know that someone is there to support them when they need them. They know that they are important to somebody. And because of that, the same is true for what happens if that is not happening as well. So if you've got a baby who is not being responded to, who is not seeing a smiling face, who is left crying for long, long, long periods of time, who's not being fed, then the neurons in the brain make little pathways that say, actually, I'm not deserving of love, or I am, no one is there for me when I need them. And unfortunately, those pathways then get stronger every time that message is given to that baby or to that child. And those lessons are really, really difficult to unlearn. And that's what we're doing then as foster parents, is trying to support these children to learn new things. Because often we've got children who've had, 2, 3, 5, 10 years of the same negative messages. And so if we are saying, don't worry, everything's fine now, often that's not enough, is it? We need consistency.
Yeah.
And we need to be supporting children in a really attachment-focused and trauma-informed way, so that we're able to give them the best chance.
And that links back, Anna, to what I was saying about teaching people to parent therapeutically, to parent in a different way to the way that you might look after birth children who haven't been through this trauma.
That's the end of part one of the Sunshine Radio podcast with Family Fostering Partners. In part two, we hear more about the process of actually becoming a foster parent and the ongoing support and networking available to people who become a foster parent. Eddie also tells us about his first respite night with a child and how that went. Part two is available to listen to and download now.